He's kind of like the Joe Rogan of the hospitality industry right now.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
You're listening to Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast, a podcast for those who are in and around the hospitality industry who love, live, and breathe what they do. You can join us for candid and unscripted conversations with hospitality experts and founders as we go deeper into their personal stories while they're sharing their triumphs and trials that got them to where they are today. I'm your host, Will Slickers, and you're listening to an episode of Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast. Now, let's begin. All right, we are live for our first Unique Stays and Experiential Roundtable, where we're going to cover a lot of things from the outdoor hospitality operators like Ben Wolf from Onera. We also have Jeremy Wells from the Ozarker based out in, I think, Missouri. I might be butchering that, so we'll let Jeremy correct me. And many other awesome experts and industry leaders covering experience, brand design. What does a soft brand mean? What does the media first business look like from Ben as well, and many, many other topics. So as I bring up my panelists, we're going to dive right in for our Unique Stays Experiential Roundtable. Welcome everybody to the group. How are you guys doing? Michael Golden, Sangeeta, so great to see you and meet you. I'm excited, and I think we have a lot of opportunities to dive in. I did some brief intros for you guys, but I'm going to let you guys all give a high level, let's do less than 30 second overview of who you are and what you're doing. And we'll start with Michael Golden.
Long time no see, Will. Hello, everybody. I'm Michael Golden. I'm the COO at Nook Experiences, which is the first outdoor soft brand trying to tie together all of the outdoor experiential properties. Doesn't have to be five-star luxury, but it does have to have a wonderful experience around both the stay and the outdoors there around the property.
Not only is Michael COO of Nook, he's the co-founder of Storied Collection and my co-host on Good Morning Hospitality. So shout out to you, my friend. Jeremy Wells, welcome back. Good to see you. Let's let you cover your segment and jump right in.
Awesome. Appreciate you guys having me on. My name is Jeremy Wells. I'm a branding and design guy by background and trade, kind of turned hotelier recently over the last 3 years or so. Partner at Longitude since about 2018, where we've worked with a lot of different great independent boutique hospitality brands around the world. And then about 3 years ago, acquired and renovated our first hotel project in the Ozarks. And you were right, it was in Missouri, so good job. But 102 room boutique hotel now called the Ozarker Lodge. And, that was our first, chance at becoming hoteliers. And it was really a great experience so far. And we're, just started our first calendar year. So hopefully 2024 will be a great year for us. Also self-published a couple books in the hospitality space, one called Future Hospitality back in 2020. And then more recently, a book called Indie Hotel, which I published last September. So excited to be here and be a part of this panel.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Jeremy and Sangeeta. This is the first time I've ever gotten to meet you, so mm-hmm. I'm excited to hear a little bit more about your story. Give us a high-level overview.
Yeah, so hotelier by background. Worked at IHG for over a decade. That was kind of my first foray into hospitality. I was working as an architect before that and went to business school and joined IHG. Was in various roles at IHG, mostly on the design and branding side on a global level, and ended up as head of luxury design and guest experience. And started my own brand, a glamping brand called Dunia Camp. We started in 2021, and we have 6 units in North Georgia.
Awesome. And Mr. Wolf himself, welcome back, my friend. Good to see you.
Hey guys, yeah, thanks for thanks for including me on this. So Ben Wolf, I am a unique stays and landscape hotel developer and operator. Started actually in the short-term rental Airbnb space, more traditional rentals. Had a management company with a couple hundred units before I took the foray into development and kind of had to learn how to do that in early COVID. Built Onera, which is a luxury landscape and treehouse hotel in the Texas Hill Country, which has been quite successful. And we're currently expanding. We're growing by 50 keys across two locations and over $30 million in development right now. And I have two new projects that I'm hopefully going to share with the world in the next few years that are starting now.
I love it. And I feel like I gave everyone some questions for any viewers or listeners listening to this. I gave everyone some questions and guidelines on like maybe the conversation direction. But I think the first question I should have asked is, how the hell do you guys have all the time for all these projects? It seems like everyone's got their hand in like 10,000 different things. So congrats to you guys for pulling it off and finding extra minutes throughout your day or being maybe more efficient than most people. But I want to open up the conversation, and this is not a question directed towards any single person. So this is going to be open for the floor. But with this category on such a rise, where do you see the most opportunities? And also, where do you see most people missing the mark or the big picture? Is it in brand? Is it in location? Is it design, attention to detail, all the above? You name it. Whoever wants to go first, you may grab the mic.
Ladies first.
Or I'm going to pick on you and have you go first.
Well, it's just been a year in, so I'm not so sure if I have done so much research into what's been happening in the history of the space. But at first glance, I think it's actually quite an exciting time. I'm really impressed with some of the newer projects. I think there was a phase where it was kind of bootstrapped and very simple. And I think now it's getting into a more sophisticated space. So I think we'll see how it evolves. But from a design perspective, it's quite interesting. And yeah, even service and branding, yeah.
I agree. I think we're in this interesting phase. Ben, I don't know when you jumped into short-term rentals, but it was about 10 years ago for me. And it was the early days. There were no massive professional operators. All the operators that were professional were single market, you know, Destin, Myrtle Beach type of folks. And there was just this mass surge of professionalization in the space. And Airbnb particularly went from single listings to now professional listings and accounts with hundreds or thousands of properties attached to it. And I think we're in a bit of an interesting place where everyone's learning what works, what doesn't. You know, I think there's a lot of sites that don't have plumbing or electricity, and those sites are not necessarily, I think they're probably actively looking for how they can level their game up, because the new developers, the people that are coming in now and building sites with better amenities, bigger sites, et cetera, that's really going to kind of push the bar forward for the space.
Yeah. So, I mean, piggybacking off that a little bit, I would actually say something that wasn't, you know, listed well, which is more on the luxury and higher end side of things, offering more to guests. I think there's a ton of people trying to, you know, throw up domes or container homes or tents and not putting a whole lot of thought into it beyond, oh, I can get this kind of up and running cheap and charge a high rate. And I think there's a ton of people doing that right now and trying to do that. And the winners will be the ones, I think, like Sangeeta. I mean, I love the product that you put out with Dunya. And I think the folks that will win are going to be the ones that lean into the experience, to making sure you have a seamless, you know, check-in. And if you need any help at your stay or, you know, additional amenities, you know, water features, and really just building units to a higher standard and to differentiate. I talk to investors about this a lot, and they're like, wow, your cost per key is a lot for something they think of as glamping, even though I talk about it as landscape hotel. And what I often say is by spending more, I actually think it's a safer investment, because I'm creating a competitive moat that just, you know, mom and pop off the street can't throw up a tent in the backyard and replicate what I'm building. So that's where I see things going. I also would say group travel is a big area that I'm trying to focus on more. I think there's some folks in the space. AutoCamp does a pretty good job of this, of catering to groups. But I think on the higher end side of things, I consider AutoCamp more of like a mid-tier offering. And when it comes to luxury, I don't know there's anyone doing it really well in the experiential landscape hotel side of things for group stays. And we're trying to really offer that with some of the new concepts that we're rolling out. Historically, Onera has been more focused on romantic getaways and couples travel. In the next couple projects I'm rolling out, we're going to have conference rooms and, you know, but still in that realm of making it beautifully integrated with the environment. But creating these things that groups want, event space that can host 150, 200 people, conference rooms, you know, limited service spa, maybe even a limited food and beverage restaurant offering, which we haven't done before, but which groups usually want. So, yeah, those are just some ideas of what I think is coming and what we're pushing for.
All right, Slick Talkers. Sorry for jumping into the episode here and this amazing roundtable. I love getting to chat with multitude of people and guests on certain topics and themes like this unique stay roundtable. But did you know that just because you're an outdoor or experiential hospitality brand, that doesn't mean you can get away without having noise and smoke sensors inside of your properties? Well, you are in luck because our friends at Minute have the perfect solution for you. They're battery powered, so you don't need to worry about any of the electrical outlets and power issues set up for your unique stay. And you can enhance your team experience and your guest experience by ensuring smoking of any kind, from cigarette smoke to marijuana and others, are being detected. Not campfire smoke. We like campfire smoke. But many other things around the overall party and sensing noise around that. Because let's be honest, if you're in a nice camping cabin or glamping cabin, as I should say, and you have maybe some neighbors close by, you don't know who they are, they're a little rowdy, maybe having a little too much to drink, you want to be able to ensure that as an operator, you are on top of it and not causing disturbances within your community and overall ground and property. So get with Minute, check them out, use the link in the show notes for 2 months free, and let them know that we'll send you from Slick Talk. Now back to the roundtable.
I love all of your guys' answers. And I think one of the things and reasons why I picked all of you guys, right, is because you've all built a brand in either a soft brand, a direct brand, an operating company, all the above. And so, Jeremy, I know you're just about to answer, but I kind of want to ask you a direct question around this brand and product, right? So what Ben was just saying, a lot of people think they could just throw up a dome, a container home, a thing like that, and charge high rates and hopefully make some cash. You're a brand guy. You're all brand people, which is what I admire. I'm not the best at brand at sometimes, and could always get better and learn from the best. So where do you see the kind of correlation between brand and product, especially in this unique experience space, whether it's outdoor or landscape hotel, as Ben calls it, or in just general awesome guest experience?
Yeah, you know, for the first question that you had asked about like opportunities and where people maybe miss the mark, I think is kind of ties well within the, you know, this brand question too. You know, I think it's, I hate to use this phrase cause it's pretty cliche at this point, but really like, you know, understanding a bigger why behind what you're doing and what your thesis is behind, you know, what you're building, you know, is very important from the get go. And it has to be more, you know, to Ben's point, it has to be more than just dollars and cents or, you know, building cloud or your own portfolio and just trying to, you know, it has to mean something to yourself and then ultimately hopefully to others. And so as you're, you know, you're building a brand, I see a lot of people miss the mark from that perspective, is because they don't really have conviction or a strong idea of what they're building in the first place, and it's just all about, you know, kind of surface level things. So I think first and foremost you want to make sure that you're, you know, building a brand that you can be passionate about, you can have a purpose with. You know, for years, even before I became a hotelier myself, you know, working with clients all over the world, it's like constantly having these conversations and preaching like, you know, your brand is not just colors. It's not logo. It's not your pretty designs. Your brand is your reputation. You know, and some people have trouble understanding that, you know, you're not going to really have a brand, so to speak, for several months or even years after you've launched. And it only becomes a brand or your reputation after people are actually familiar with it and have encountered it, have experienced it. So I think there's, you know, people need to understand that there's this divide between the present right now and then when someone's going to first experience your product. And the question that we ask our clients and we ask ourselves through the brands that we're building is, you know, what are you doing in the meantime in that gap? And that's where, you know, brand strategy comes into place. That's where, you know, really thoughtful discussions with your team and decisions there comes into place. You know, a strong brand strategy for your business and your brand is really your guiding light is what it's supposed to be. And it's supposed to help you make stronger, more thoughtful, deliberate decisions in your business, marketing, branding, design, operations, everything. So I think, you know, I think that's one area where a lot of people miss the mark is when you have conversations about brand, it's always, well, it's my logo, it's my colors, it's my name. It's, you know, all that stuff is part of your branding that you're doing, but it's, you know, you need to understand it's more holistic and take action accordingly.
I love that. I had a shower thought, and I probably will get canceled from some people in the industry for this comment and statement, but I was thinking exactly what you said, Jeremy, like brand builds reputation and not badges. I see a lot of people trying to create a unique badge or a certain badge of trust in the industry, and badges don't create trust. It's your brand reputation that you have with the customer. And I think that's way more important than showing a badge that you pay $800 a year for, just to say that you have this badge. So my more direct question now to you three, which would be Ben, Sangeeta, and Jeremy, is what have you learned when it comes to building your own actual structure and property? There's real dollars behind what you guys have built, and it's not cheap. So what are the biggest lessons you've learned from building brands and properties at the same time? And I'll let, actually, Sangeeta, let's go ladies first again. I like this rule. My sisters would be proud.
Gosh, I would have to say it's just something that Ben was saying earlier. You know, don't skimp. I think that's something that we definitely learned. You know, we did skimp on some things and we had to go back and basically redo them. I mean, for the average guest, they're not even going to know, but we know, right? Sometimes those details show up in the most unexpected ways. So I think like having that kind of stay true to what you had in mind and not... like for instance, just to give you an example, we had our decks are ginormous. The tent is a small tent and it's a huge deck. This was a big point of contention between me and my husband because he was like, no, bigger is better. It's going to look better. So we tried one that was smaller the way I wanted it. And we tried another one the way he wanted it. And it was just like, why are we even arguing over this? Like bigger is better. You know, like it just gave that sense of expansiveness. So it's small details, but they all matter, right? So I think that's one thing we learned is just don't take the shortcut.
Well, let's spotlight some of your experience in the background. For the viewers and listeners, you were with IHG for over 10 years, and you're, from what I saw on your LinkedIn, was that your last position was Global Design Director of the Luxury Portfolio. Anything that you took away from that experience into building your own property, or did you kind of just trust your gut and what you and your husband had envisioned or what you guys have today?
Well, I mean, all those experiences matter for sure. The one thing I didn't do was I didn't do my brand house, and it's all in my head, right? I have a virtual brand house in my head. So we do follow it, you know, pretty well. Like I think all the decisions we make are clear with the, what kind of, it's just not on paper, which it's on my list of things to do, is to do my own brand house. No, I think the biggest lesson is just the detail. I mean, our guests, you know, the kind of guests we get, they don't really leave us any reviews, but we do have guest books in all of the units. And it's just amazing to read that. We're trying to figure out how to kind of put that on a website, you know, almost do like stories from guests kind of thing. And everybody talks about the detail, the attention to detail and how they felt. And I'm like, this is it. You know, this is kind of what I was going for. And I think we, you know, we are doing okay so far. I hope we continue to be consistent. But yeah, the details are important.
I love that. Well, back to Jeremy and Ben, I would love to know your also lessons learned through building, and Jeremy even acquiring and having to remodel and renovate, which we kind of talked about on our episode on Slick Talk. But yeah, let's open up the floor there for you two.
Yeah, I think there's importance when building a brand and building a product that, again, and I'm a brand guy, so I always go back to branding because I just feel it's so important. You need to know who you are as a brand, and it helps when you know that truly, it gives you clear yes and no decision making power in everything. And so what that affords you is you're not just making decisions always based on it's the cheapest or, you know, it's gut reactions to things. You're making decisions more often with conviction and with purpose. And so that doesn't always equate to a strong bottom line or top line revenue, but it equates to doing the right thing, right, for your brand. I think an example of this for the Ozarker, and I think I've talked about this with you, Will, on the podcast I was with you on, but, you know, it doesn't make a lot of dollars and cents when I purchased a Jeep Wagoneer, 1982 Jeep Wagoneer, and I restored it myself in my garage and painted it and put on the decals and did everything and then parked it out front, you know, the hotel. I had to get my partners weren't even really on board with that when I bought it. So I just bought it out of my own money and did it myself. I was like, I'll just convince them down the road that this is the right decision. And now fast forward, you know, that's like a focal point of the hotel. People are taking photos by it all the time. It's iconic. It's in like every photo you see of the Ozarker. So I didn't do it because it made sense financially at the time. I did it because it was the right thing to do. And I think when you can have that approach to your brand and really just have that understanding of who you are, who you're not, what's right, what's wrong for your brand, you know, I think that puts you in a really strong position to you know, attract people that think the same way as you do. So
ask for forgiveness later, right? That's kind of the whole message on that one. Well, if
it comes out of your own pocket, you don't have to ask for forgiveness. So
yeah, true. They just reap the reward. Yeah, Ben, what about you? I know we've talked a lot personally, but for the audience sake.
Yeah, I mean, certainly with what Sangeeta said around not skimping. I mean, I've learned the hard way with that one. Tried to source some product from China, you know, and didn't have good quality control on the ground. Had to throw out some of that product, retrofit it, spend countless hours trying to make it work. And yeah, so that was a big challenge. Ended up costing us probably more money than we aimed to save in the beginning. So won't be doing that again unless we have a really strong relationship with an offshore supplier. And you know, I'm thinking less about, you know, how do I save 20, 30, 40% and how do I spend 20 to 30% more to double my ADR or, you know, to double my rev par. I mean, that's more about where my head's at, because again, I think there's such a gap between the mid tier in the outdoor hospitality space and then like the ultra luxury, right? You have these, you know, a ton in the $200 to $500 a night range, really like $200 to $400, I think is the biggest bulk. And then you have not a ton, but you have some that have been around for decades, like Post Ranch Inn and Amangiri and some of these places that are, you know, 1500, two grand, three, four grand a night, but there's just not a lot in the 1500, you know, 500 to 1500 range. And I think there's a really big opportunity there. So how do we, you know, elevate the architecture and the design and really, you know, inspire guests to want to stay with us and sort of keep staying ahead of what everybody else is doing? I mean, that's always what I'm thinking about. On the brand side, you know, branding and marketing is really something that I've delved into in the past, I would say year and a half, in a much bigger way. 2023, you know, really kind of doubled down on social media marketing and building the brand. And now we design with social media in mind, right? We design like, how is this going to video? How is this going to show on Instagram? How are we going to get the shot that we want? What's not going to work? The layout of the unit related to what somebody might do in a video in a more of a lifestyle shot. So we're thinking about all those things. And the newest piece that we're really leaning into is how do we share it with the world along the way? Because I think that people really resonate and care about the journey and they connect with, you know, you as a founder or a founding team, and some of the struggles that go into it and the inspiration of being there from the beginning. So I'm really going to try to do that in a much bigger way. I think there's really amazing examples of that. Devin Laura with Pacific Bin, right? He kind of did the whole build in public thing, I think is one of the first to do it in a big way and reach close to 1 million followers. And we want to do more of that. Building in public and sort of origin story is something we want to lean into in a much bigger way.
Well, I love what you said, and to take from our original conversation that you and I had one-on-one, and you were kind of talking about building a media first business rather than just an experiential hospitality brand. So like having all these media pieces in mind before even building. I'm curious, you made the statement just now, maybe leading the way on these new trends and being ahead of the curve. But I would say from a lot of perspectives from other brands I've seen this sector take a huge rise, right? Like everyone's taking interest in outdoor hospitality, building a dome, creating a destination. I say you probably have more up foot on them because I don't see you leading like the way first. I see you kind of creating the path in a lot of ways because you found a lot of good capital. You've had a good experience on being able to build with this intentionality behind everything instead of, like a person that just goes on glampinggear.com and builds a dome and just pops it up in their backyard. You have a lot of kind of, I would say, legroom ahead of everybody else. Do you think there's ever a point that the media first business for other operators becomes the focal point? Or do you think a lot of people are still going to focus on just building to build, getting it up and trying to drive $250, maybe $300 ADRs?
So I was just talking about this with my partner, Jesse, today around, the media side of the business, which is a massive piece of our business, arguably half when you can include marketing in it. So there's the media side and then there's the development side. And he kind of made the claim and the question like, hey, if we just, if you didn't kill yourself to develop some new amazing properties, we could, just opening the expansion to Onera Fredericksburg and Onera Wimberley, we could probably build a pretty massive media business and do really well and have less stress. And my response was, I'm super passionate about developing these, cutting edge of hospitality and outdoor hospitality products. It's what gets me up in the morning. It what drives me. And I think that the media will drastically benefit from me continuing to try to push the envelope and sort of push these things that some people, might say are crazy, but you also get a lot of response when I'm pushing the envelope and trying to do things that people haven't done before or just push to the next level. Getting that wow when people see it. I mean, that's what I'm going for. And if I'm getting that, then I believe once we bring it to the market, it's going to sell itself. So, it's always going to be, in my view, it's going to be both, right? Building these one of a kind stays and continuing to lean more and more into media, and they feed each other so well. It's the two main focuses of the business, building amazing properties and sort of showing them to the world and creating all that amazing content is what we want to do. So
I think that's something all three of these folks have done quite well is the socials side. And it definitely helps. Travelers want to go and look at more pictures than what are on the website or on Airbnb or on whatever platform they're booking. And so Instagram is the first and best place to go. I'm curious. I know Ben, you and I have talked about it in Sangeetha as well. Like there's some great influencers. There's some terrible influencers that just want a free stay. But Ben, we've also had chats on tracking Instagram conversions to bookings can be a challenge. You know, it's helpful. You feel it, you see it, but like attribution can be tough. How do you balance the eyeballs to conversion thoughts? And maybe that's something for everybody.
How valuable is the day that you're comping for them? Is probably one, right? If it's a not a super valuable day, then we'll flex a little bit on, how high the engagement rate needs to be. We're always looking for people that have a relevant audience, right? A relevant targeted audience, somebody that has authority in the space that matters to us, and that's travel. And we're talking more and more about travel instead of hospitality. I think that the word travel and the experience of travel resonates with guests a lot more than, those of us that like to kind of geek out on hospitality. So we focus on travel influencers and travel adjacent. So foodies are a good example. or that cross over pretty well. They often have authority in hospitality product more broadly. And we are, we're typically looking for like 5% engagement plus, and you can use a lot of engagement calculators online to pull those scores. We will flex that down depending on, you know, day of the week that we're comping or, you know, how much they're charging. But I've also done really well with referrals, and I try to pay that forward. So if somebody's good, I try to let other people know about them, which, you know, may make them cost more for me later. But I think it's good for showing good products and getting it out there. So I try to refer the good influencers around, and they've been referred to me in a lot of cases.
I love that. Jeremy, what about you at the Ozarker? How do you guys look at this?
Yeah, so we have a, at least in my mind from experience working with other hotel, independent hotels, we have a fairly robust influencer program that we launched about 6 months ago. And it, we basically put the influencers into two buckets, and it, and each one has the value, you know, that's a different than the other. So one bucket is user generated content, where all we're looking from that influencer is them to come stay and then generate a bunch of photos and videos for us to use for future marketing and future advertising. And so, you know, we view that as far as like when you're talking about like what's the return on it and how do you quantify that, it's basically like we're paying this person for their content and through the stay at our hotel. The second bucket is someone like a travel, like Ben mentioned, a travel influencer that has a large following we want to get in front of. You know, we focus on more, not like massive international influencers. It's more like these micro influencers that are within the markets where, you know, drivable distance from our hotel. So they might have, you know, 10 to 20, maybe 30,000 followers. And that's kind of like our sweet spot there. But the way that we quantify their visit, they're oftentimes they're also creating content for us that we can reuse, but also we give them a basically their own code that they can share with their followers, and it's a stackable incentive or discount rate code. And so, you know, we can quantify and say, you know, they over the last week we received all these bookings with this person's code, so we can, and we give them basically kind of a referral bonus, the influencer referral bonus on top of that. And it's just a flat rate per room night. And so, you know, it's pretty nominal expense on our side. It benefits them because, you know, if you get, you know, 100 room nights over the course of a few weeks and you're getting a flat rate that we pay for that, I mean, it's better than nothing, right? And it can be pretty lucrative. And we've gotten had a lot of success there, gotten a lot of followers even over the last year since we launched. So it's just been, that's been really successful for us.
Ben, do you want to touch on attribution?
Yeah, I just want to, I guess, bring up that I think Michael was talking about it. You know, attribution is definitely a challenge, and it's something that we're continuing to try to improve upon. We have a public REIT as a majority owner and investor in Onera Properties, and they're very interested in true return on investment, and, you know, directly tracking what an influencer is producing, directly tracking what a video that maybe we spent thousands of dollars creating content, and then, you know, we turn that into a bunch of reels, like what is that actually generating? And we're trying our best. It's a challenge. We use UTM links, we try discount codes, you know, we try to track traffic as best we can. But to my knowledge, there still is no perfect solution to get from post to total bookings generated. And some of that comes down to the booking engines. The booking engines, you know, we've used CloudBeds in the past. We're moving towards Track. We're hoping that Track is going to be a better solution for that. But, you know, we weren't able to fully get the data that we wanted from the CloudBeds booking engine on that front. So it's a challenge. If anyone out there is working on it, I hope you come up with a solution and serve it up to me. I'm happy to pay for it.
I think you're probably going to have a lot of good offers come up from that one. I'm a big fan of Muse personally as well, because there's a couple other great PMSs and booking engines out there. But Michael, to segue to you before we go to a broader question for the group that I've been really wanting to dive into, you're the only one that's a soft brand. And I got to talk to Jake on your team about this a little bit, but what's your guys' approach with soft brands, with working with companies like Onera and getting to have other people involved under, you know, Nook?
Yeah, so it's really the sum is greater than the parts, and everyone does a great job locally. We just want to build more attention nationally. And we can do that by going to conferences, trade shows, doing outbound sales, PR, being able to mention multiple properties in various PR initiatives, and then focusing on group sales. And I don't think anyone in this space has kind of enough headcount to be going after that business that is and can be quite valuable. So it's really a combination of all of those things. And to each client or each brand member, it could be a different answer. Really, press and getting the name out there is not easy. It's a crowded space, the hospitality space, and vying for attention is not easy. And the three of you guys on the call are really good at doing it, but so many of your peers are not. And I think there's a huge opportunity to kind of scream from the rooftops that these properties are fantastic corporate offsite locations. We've driven a couple of those bookings already to a few of our properties where they want to get out of the cities. They want to have kind of a blend of a both comfortable hospitality experience, but be able to spend the day out in nature or look outside and see, you know, a river running through the property or whatever it may be. So, you know, I think there's a lot of soft brands that exist out there in luxury boutique hotels or in design initiatives or in food initiatives like Relais Chateau. And we obviously see an opportunity in the outdoor space to be the go-to brand that people think of.
I love that. Well, to go into the broader question, and this is for everybody, and we'll, if no one jumps in, I'm gonna pick on you to go first. So just FYI, I'm very curious. You know, how should the sector be treated, Michael? You just kind of actually mentioned something there, but we all kind of come from a different, you know, piece of the hospitality pie, from hotels to short-term rentals. We all come from a seat at the table already. Where does this unique sector, outdoor, you know, hospitality to even just unique stays, or Ben, I love the term landscape hotels, where does this chair belong to at the table? Does it belong under a specific category already with hotel short-term rentals, or is it none of the above and have to kind of create its own category? Do you guys see it in a certain way, or do you think it's already belonging under a current umbrella?
So if I could jump in briefly, I would say, sometimes I think that the distinction even between STR and hotel is a little bit artificial. Like, where is the line? Is it service? Because you have select service hotels that have similar service to some short-term rentals and vacation rental communities. Is it multiple units on the same property? Okay, well, then you have short-term rental communities, you know, which could also be thought of as a hotel. So it's like, to me, it's less about short-term rental versus hotel. And it's more about, is it a hospitality product that's catering to the modern traveler's needs? And to me, that's experiential, high design, Instagrammable, a personal connection to the founder, the team. They discover you on social media. You have a tech forward approach. And, you know, in some cases, less staff, just because with a tech forward approach, it's not as necessary. So yeah, to me, it's more about, are you catering to that modern experiential traveler?
I do want to put a disclaimer. This isn't a, I don't want it to make it sound like a versus, like hotel versus short-term rental. I definitely wanted to have a approach of, you know, like you said, that line is very thin. There's hybrid hotels where it's basically a short-term rental in a sense of without a front desk. So definitely not a versus, but want to know where this kind of belongs. Because I hear, on the, maybe to give more context for you guys, I hear more on the traditional VRM side, or from like the VRMA community, that they look at unique stays as like the next wave of these Airbnb hosts that are coming in and just trying to cash grab, which is not always the case, right? And then you have the Airbnb hosts who look at glamping as the next opportunity to build a brand and legacy for their family and for future wealth, and obviously like bringing amazing moments and experiences to the traveler overall. So, love to just give overall perspectives. I'm trying to definitely not trying to make it a us versus them type scenario, but just giving the context
Game on. Now, I've got a couple of comments on this. So the average glamping site, I read some data yesterday, the average glamping site has 9 units. So they're all individual keys. It is definitely more akin to the short-term rental space than the hotel space. But as you scale up in unit count, it starts to look a little bit more like a hotel or a resort. So I think the answer is they're both, similar to what Ben's saying. In short-term rentals 10 years ago, it wasn't called vacation rental or short-term rentals. It was called alternative accommodations. And I think now that's mainstream enough, and now all of this is kind of alternative accommodations that sits in between short-term rentals and hotels. What urban operators like Sonder do are probably more akin to hotels than they are vacation rentals. And so the line doesn't really matter. It's about the accommodation, the experience, and where the traveler is going to find them, I think is also an important thing to think about. The glory of sitting in the middle of it is you get distribution on Airbnb, but you also get it on Expedia, of course, Vrbo as well, but it kind of, you can get distribution more widely with an interesting, diverse unit set.
I love that. Anybody else have thoughts or comments around this?
Yeah, I was going to jump in. I think when you're asking like which one has the seat at the table for this type of category, I think, you know, even transcending hotels and short-term rentals, I mean, you're looking at least we're getting a lot of inquiries over the last few years of brands where you otherwise wouldn't think that they would necessarily be in the hospitality space or the experiential space. I mean, we have people we've worked with that are like mountain bike parks, and, you know, they're starting to infuse food and beverage into their site programming and planning. They're starting to do these little units, like, you know, glamping units. And, you know, you're starting to see more and more that there's like this blend of, you know, different types of business categories that are trying to infuse this outdoor experiential approach in their own way. And obviously we're talking about lodging right now and specifically, but I think overall, as long as you have an experience that's unique and it's in the outdoors, I think you're checking the necessary boxes. Whatever vehicle you use for that, whether it's a short-term rental model or a hotel model or a resort or whatever, you know, I think it's more of a just staying true to what it means to be truly unique, truly outdoors, truly experiential. You know, I think when you first started asking this question, I thought back, you know, a couple of decades ago when boutique hotels started becoming a thing. And then slowly got the larger brands that started having these soft brands, and like they started calling them boutique hotels. And then you start having arguments with people about what is a boutique hotel, what's not, and you start having different definitions around it. And like it just gets really messy really quick, unless you can kind of distill it down into really, you know, what is the true essence of what we're talking about here. It's you're in the outdoors, you're creating an experience, and it's unique. And you know, a lot of that, if you can check those three boxes, and I think you have a seat at the table.
I love that. Great sentiment. Sangeeta, any thoughts? You're a little quiet over there, so I want to see if we can pull a little bit more out of you today.
Oh, I think I agree with all of it. I mean, it's got its own, I think it's becoming its own category. I mean, I can tell you with some level of confidence that a lot of people, like Nook, they're looking at, you know, these kind of like a design hotels type thing, like a collection of sorts, even at the bigger chains. So it's not going unnoticed. It's going to become the next boutique category, really, whatever it's called. It's landscape hotel or outdoor lodging or whatever it's called, or glamping.
Yeah.
I think what, Ben, should it be called? Let's decide today on this call.
That is a hard one. That's going to require another brand strategy exercise.
I was going to say, Ben, you got to get those trademarks up and running. Make sure no one else is able to steal that. Capitalize while you can. But to go in, because I know we're getting close to our time here today, but I also look at this really kind of like an interesting perspective from all of you guys. The unique stay outdoor experience, whether it's a hotel like the Ozarker or something built out just like, you know, Onera or anything else that you've done, Sangeeta, from your experience at IHG to what you have now. Distribution. And, you know, I think, Michael, you just briefly touched on it. You know, you can be on Airbnb, you can be on Expedia, even Vrbo. Yeah. But do you think the travelers are really seeking on that platform? I know Airbnb did some changes with their categories, like the OMG category, and they have other things around kind of outdoor and hospitality brands like that. But, you know, in COVID, we saw such a big kind of shift or a pickup in even like glampinghub.com or HitCamp and like all these other unique niche OTAs. Do you think those are the distribution channels that operators like yourselves should be focusing on? Or is it the media first approach like Ben, where Instagram is king and TikTok and all these other short form reels that are driving direct traffic? Where do you guys see distribution?
For me, it's media first. 100% of our bookings is direct and it's driven through media. We're on Airbnb, but it's really tough. I think it's also where you sit. So if you're a luxury product, I think you need to be careful about where you distribute. It can't be a mass distribution channel, is my view. I mean, it could be.
Yeah. So you're 100% direct through media.
Yes.
Is what you're. Yes. Wow. That's awesome. Congrats to you. That's round of applause. Like, that's a big win.
Who needs the OTAs?
Yeah. Seriously. Yeah. No, that's so good.
I love that strategy, Sangeeta, and ride that as long as you absolutely can. And some sites can ride that in perpetuity. I think the idea is to get yourself in as many places as you can, that still doesn't water down or dilute the brand. If you feel like being on Airbnb dilutes the brand, then don't be on Airbnb. But that said, you know, and I guess it's also harder the bigger the site, the more rooms you have to fill, the more challenging it is, and the more kind of broad you have to go. If you keep it super high ADRs, you have very limited supply. Both Sangeeta and Ben have done a great job at this. You can drive significant rate. As you scale out into more units, more unit types, whatever, more keys, it's going to be harder to maintain either the ADR or the occupancy. And Ben, you look like you're about to correct me on something, but I'll let you go jump in.
Yeah. I mean, look, we're just doubling down on our marketing budgets. We're underwriting massive marketing budgets relatively large marketing budgets for our new properties that have more keys. Of course, I'm a big proponent of the book direct movement and, you know, promoting on Instagram and TikTok and, you know, through YouTube content that we put out just so, you know, people find out about us. I'm shocked to find out how many people, you know, saw the video of me with Shelby Church going over how I built it that like stay at Onera due to that video, which was more in my mind, more of like a business focused investor or, you know, future opportunity focused video. But yeah, guests are finding us through all these platforms. But when you think about, I mean, we're saving 11, 12% sometimes that goes directly to bottom line. We see higher rates when people book direct through social media. They're a emotional, aspirational buyer, right? They're not price shopping on one of these platforms. So often you're willing to charge, you know, you're able to charge a higher rate and they're willing to pay it. So when you think about a 28, 30 key place, like what we're building Onera Wimberley right now. I mean, we're projecting, you know, millions and millions a year in revenue. When you take 11 or 12% of that, that's a pretty healthy marketing budget. So even if we spent that full amount in marketing, then we own the customer. There's a decent chance they're actually going to pay a higher rate. And we control, you know, the whole experience from end to end. We can market them for future properties. We're all in on the book direct side of things. It blows my mind some of the people that are really good at social media that still include the Airbnb link on their profile and say like book direct for 5%. You know, people that have hundreds of thousands or even like a million followers. And I don't know if it's a limiting belief around credibility or maybe people won't trust my site as much as they trust Airbnb, but it's crazy to me. If you like, I think that guests and the broader kind of consumer public have more trust and faith in people individually and your personal brand authority than they do in even some cases like a bigger brand. So I think there's a shift there, and you know, everyone should try to book direct as much as they can. But it's not cheap, right? You have to invest in good content. You have to pay for, you know, the best influencers. And yeah, just really put it at the forefront of your strategy.
Before going to Jeremy, I think a lot of the things I hear when people put like the Airbnb link in their Instagram is that the booking experience is easier for the traveler rather than having to enter all this information again. It's already saved in their Airbnb profile. It's two clicks and booked. So I think, you know, there's still a lot of work, honestly, like, yeah, this is a whole nother round table we can get into, but I think there's still a lot of work needed to be done on the tech side for Book Direct, from booking engines to Book Direct sites. Natalie Palmer makes a comment all the time, why would I spend tens of thousands of dollars on building a brand and a website for people to not want to book on it because it's a shitty experience overall. Like, it sucks. Like, no one wants to enter in all the same info over and over and over again when it's already saved on Airbnb or other platforms. So I get both sides, but Jeremy, with you guys, I'm very curious. You're a hotel, experiential hotel. I'm not going to put you in just one category, but a very experiential hotel with over 100 units on one property. How do you guys look at distribution? Do you look outside of the overall OTAs and like other, I guess, avenues, or do you apply the media route as well? All right, Slick Talkers, this roundtable, many topics are mentioned multiple times, but the one that keeps getting mentioned is Book Direct and branding. Let me tell you, our friends at Hudson Creative Studio are kind of the best because they do Book Direct sites for multiple brands, whether you're a short-term rental operator, a hotelier, or a unique stay outdoor or landscape hotel. Not only do they do the website, but they have an amazing booking engine where I know in this roundtable, I kind of complain about Book Direct and how the booking experience for the traveler is kind of a pain in the butt. Well, with the booking engine that Hudson Creative Studio has built and integrated with our partners at Hostfully, you can have that seamless experience as well and make it really nice and, let's just say, not clunky for your guests to have to go from your direct site to the booking page. It's all seamless and pretty well integrated with your overall tech stack. So no matter the type of brand you're trying to build, get with Hudson Creative Studio and also let them know that we'll send you from Slick Talk and you can get awesome deals. On top of that, your tech stack is still important. Whether you're outdoors and distributing on unique sites and OTAs like HitCamp or Glamping Hub, etc., Expedia, Airbnb, Vrbo, all these other platforms are directly connected within Hostfully's amazing marketplace and integration center. So no matter what OTA and distribution strategy you would like to do, you can partner up with Hostfully and manage your calendar all at once for multiple units and cabins or multiple unique stay properties such as your hotel, your glamping domes, and other unique creative outlets. So don't let the unique stay experience get ruined in your operations by not having a tech stack and going the old school way with a pen and paper calendar, or maybe let's say Google Calendar. Get with Hostfully. Use my discount code in the show notes and the link. Let them know that we'll send you to get an amazing deal. You get $100 off their PMP, and you also get 3 months free of their digital guidebooks. What more could you ask for? Now, back to the roundtable.
Yeah, you know, in the hotel space, I would think it's a little bit different. I don't have a lot of experience in short-term rentals, but with hotels, it's, you know, it's kind of this thing of like, you know, there's three things that are always certain: death, taxes, and OTAs. And it's, you know, it's really just the reality of the industry, of the hotel industry, is especially launching a brand new product in a new market. The Ozarka, for instance, was, you know, there's nothing like it in this area. So you kind of expect heavier reliance on OTAs during the ramp up period. And, you know, it's kind of just it is what it is. And you have to deal with that unless you've done a lot of that groundwork and other marketing or PR, like Ben was alluding to, with some people that, you know, even before launch, they're building fan bases and all that and direct, but a lot of people just, you know, aren't doing that. So it's more of a play on, you know, starting off heavy reliance on OTAs. You know, it could be 60-70%+ of your bookings out of the gate for the first year, 18 months. But ultimately you want to wean yourself off of that. You know, as you're stabilizing your property and building your own database of, you know, followers and email addresses and all of that. You know, we definitely invest heavily in trying to, you know, our marketing budget is, you know, 10% or a little bit more than that as well. And, you know, we're wanting to obviously invest in direct bookings. We're doing everything we can to make that experience pleasurable to people and familiar to people. But the reality is OTAs is, you know, and I would say this is also not just a business decision, it's a brand decision, because, you know, in a luxury market, I think, you know, most people are not going to go to Expedia.com to book a, you know, $1,000 a night room. So you have a, I think you need to ask yourself, and, you know, in the case of the Ozarker and Branson, Missouri and the Ozarks, very family friendly budget destination, like our ADR, you know, 150 a night average throughout the year. So it's, you know, it's more of a thinking of who is our, the ideal, who's the ideal guest, and then who's the typical traveler coming to Branson? Where are they looking? Not everyone's going to be going directly to your site, you know, when it's a market like ours. So it does take some thought, not only from a business decision, but a brand decision, as to where you need to be placed.
Very well said. Very well said. And I'm definitely going to take that line from you: death, taxes, and OTAs, guaranteed. I love it. All right. Well, I want to stay on time and respect your guys' time as well. We have had a loyalist fan who's been viewing and watching and commenting in, Tanner Cummings. Want to give him a shout out, one, for being on, but two, he asked a great question, and I would love this to be the final closing question before we all wrap up, and is, how many more of these types of lodging places do you think the market can handle? Do you think it's an abundance, or do you think there's going to be a cap in order to broaden this category and not oversaturate the market?
I'll jump in there first, if that's okay. I think we're just really starting. There's a lot of development going on right now. I think most of the development that's coming in the future is going to be larger key counts, coming fully serviced, food and bev programs, you know, going to look more like hotels than vacation rentals. I do think there will be at some point too many. You know, short-term rentals in Nashville, for example, grew 300 or 400% 3 or 4 years in a row, and then washed out so many people because there's the supply was too high. We've seen supply in Miami grow by, what was it, 1,200%, Will? And ADRs just plummet. And that puts a lot of financial strain on the companies that are out there. So I wouldn't look around at who's out there today. I would try and find who's out there, who's developing in your areas, to make sure it's not going to be oversaturated. But that said, if you build a highly differentiated product, it doesn't matter how many kind of other properties mid-market that are out there, you're going to be differentiated. If you lead with brand and storytelling, like Jeremy's saying, like Sangeeth has done, and then build bigger like Ben is doing, I think there's definitely ways to differentiate yourself and expand. And then, I'll stop there.
Well, then say, so basically you're saying these three are the examples to follow for everyone listening and tuning in. So don't listen to us, just watch what they're doing.
I'm saying there's still a lot of growth coming in the space. If the growth continues at this pace, there will be too much in 4 or 5 years, but I don't think we're anywhere close to it.
Yeah, just to piggyback on that a little bit, I think we're very early in this space. I also, will there be too many domes or container homes or yurts in 5 years that are kind of more mid-tier? Maybe. But I think that the operators that are pushing the envelope, trying to provide a truly differentiated and unique experience, will be the ones that win. And, you know, fortunate or unfortunate, like the ones that can invest more in a higher quality product, in a more elevated experience, I think they're better poised to weather the competition because there's just a higher barrier to entry. So if you're able to do that, I often tell this people a lot, like, one way to insulate yourself, I think, is build fewer, better units if you're a smaller operator. So instead of trying to do 10, just do 5 of the most amazing, you know, places, and you'll get better occupancy, you'll get much higher rates. So if you're capital constrained, just do fewer, but do them better. Your margins will be better, right? Like your OPEX margin is typically going to go down if you have a, you know, more one of a kind elevated sort of structure and stay. So those would be some sort of tips and advice on that front. But I think that the ones that are really going to lose here longer term are the more stale, older, you know, the Red Roof Inns and the Motel Sixes and, you know, the sort of cookie cutter box hotels. I believe that they're going to be the ones that are going to lose, and they're going to have to evolve, or they're going to lose market share because the modern traveler doesn't want what they're offering anymore. Especially when they can pay, even if it's paying 20, 30, 40% more, sometimes double and triple, the modern traveler wants the experience and they're willing to pay more to get it. It's not just about heads and beds anymore. So I think the big brands will have to adapt, or that product will suffer the most.
Dropping bombs. Yeah. Drop mic. All right, Jeremy.
I think too, like that, I think Ben brought up a good point is, you know, the barrier to entry is so high, especially on like, you know, what the type of product Ben is doing, you know, even just the site planning and the preparation, like, will, you know, be a non-starter for a lot of people. But even if you do have the capital to get through that process, you know, a lot of people, you know, like, are just not very thoughtful with the brand, and it's just about putting yurts out there and hoping people buy it, and it's a cash grab, like you alluded to earlier. So I think, you know, to Ben's point, I do agree the mid-tier kind of less thoughtful products out there are going to suffer pretty quickly, just due to market demand. I think, you know, I still think there's, you know, I'm from the Midwest, and my, you know, development company is called Flyover Developments. I still am a huge believer in flyover country, what a lot of people consider flyover country. So, even looking at like specific markets, I think, you know, markets like Catskills or markets like Lake Tahoe or markets like, you know, these other Poconos, like those are probably going to near closer to saturation much quicker than some other markets like the Ozarks or like, you know, other less traveled ones, I think. So I do think there's a huge opportunity in the Midwest in flyover territory. And I think it's very untapped. So I have my eyes set just personally in this corridor.
Sangeeta, last but not least.
I agree. It's kind of like we're having this conversation in the hospitality world, right? Like the new face of the future of hospitality is either you're just a cheap place to stay or you're an experience. And the people in the middle are going to get completely crushed because they're neither. It's like you're neither cheap and clean, and neither are you offering me an interesting experience where I'm willing to pay for whatever. So yeah, I think that's really what's going to basically determine whether the market is capped or not. If you're in the middle, you're not going to survive.
Yeah, I love that. Well, again, we're just on that mark of 60 minutes. So I appreciate all of your guys' time for sitting down, sharing your thoughts, sharing your ideas, sharing your stories and brands. For all the listeners, the viewers, links are going to be in the show notes for the podcast and for the replay. So make sure you follow, like, subscribe to all these amazing people. And of course, like always, we'll see you guys on the next roundtable and probably a part two for unique stays and experiences. So thank you guys so much, and we'll see you on the next one. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you to our show partners for making Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast, possible. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we would love to connect with you outside of the podcast. So you can follow us on all of our social media channels for daily hospitality content, or find us on slicktalkthepodcast.com. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode. I'm your host, Will Slickers, and we will see you guys all again next week.